All right. Well, welcome to the Viking Press Pass, episode 21. I'm Matthew Nichol, and joining me today from the men's basketball team, senior guard and one of the captains, Evan Ambrose. So, Evan, thanks for joining me here on a nice Sunday morning.
Thanks for having me. Really appreciate you letting me be on and share some of my thoughts and stories.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Well, you know, we originally had this scheduled for Friday, but of course, you know, the practice schedule got adjusted a little bit, but hey, this is great timing. I mean, coming off a huge 32-point win at home yesterday to a very good, you know, Bethel team that came in 8-2, and you can hear it in my voice. You know, I lost a little bit of it last night, you know, cheering and you know, some of the tough calls that, you know, that the referees were making last night. But kind of initial reactions, I mean, to the game last night.
I mean, anytime you can get a win in front of your home fans, it's, you know, you're really grateful for that. We love coming after Christmas and kind of getting back on our home floor and getting back into the groove of things before a really tough test on New Year's Eve at Wisconsin Lutheran. They're a hell of a team as well. But as for the game last night, I mean, I think we were very locked in, very focused on, you know, the game plan that Coach Delp had set out for us. You know, they've got a couple really good players, and we keyed in on them in the first half, and I think we kind of just rode that wave into the second half, and it was really just like our defensive intensity and attention to detail that really kept us going throughout the whole game. And I'm not sure exactly how many points we had let up, but I think it was in the 50s. And, you know, anytime you can keep a team under 60, you're going to be looking pretty good in terms of outcome and wins and losses and that sort of thing. So,
yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, you guys are red hot, you know, in the first half, and I know talking with kind of Chase the other day, you know, that's been one of the things that, you know, you guys have really been focusing on is coming out, you know, hot kind of in the first half. And, you know, you shot 62%, you know, you led by 29 with like a minute and a half left in the first. So why do you think things were clicking so well kind of in the first half yesterday?
I think it's got a lot to do with our game plan. We put in a couple new actions or wrinkles to some of our sets, specifically kind of just to attack Bethel as best as we could. We noticed that they were going to be hedging ball screens pretty hard, so we made some adjustments on some of our plays to kind of combat that, and I think it led to a lot of open looks. And then also just, I mean, it's everything starts on defense, and I think in the first half especially, we were able to get a ton of steals, deflections, and get out in transition. And I think after that, you know, we're pretty hard to guard when we're going full speed, you know, full court. So I think that really had a lot to do with our production in the first half.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it's probably one of the best first half starts, you know, I've seen the team make in probably 4 years. So that was awesome to see. And, you know, in the second half, you know, the start was a little bit slower. I know Tyler hit a jumper, you know, like, you know, about 45 seconds into the half, but then there's about a 7-minute kind of dry run until, you know, Ray Marucci made a bucket, and kind of that seemed to kind of get things going again. You know, what were you kind of dealing with as a team? What made it like so difficult to find that rhythm, you know, kind of again in the second half?
Yeah, I mean, ruts are going to happen throughout a season and throughout a game. And so one of our big focuses, you know, at the start of the year especially, and then now as well, is just trying to be able to control kind of the waves of the game. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if things aren't going super well on the offensive end, you know, shooting the ball or doing whatever, and, you know, just kind of finding different ways to make it work. And I think there was a point in time where Coach Delp called a timeout there, and he was just kind of on us to get the ball inside, and get the ball in the post. And so I think, to shout out Ray, I mean, he does a great job down there cleaning up on the offensive glass and just doing all the dirty work and the little things. And so he had a great game last night and really kind of got us going in that second half. And I think, you know, that was part of it. So, I mean, just kind of having a well-rounded attack kind of was able to lift us out of that rut. But, I mean, it's going to happen. And I think it's a great thing to, you know, face adversity. And those little things come from every opponent that you're going to play. So,
well, and it was really nice to see several Vikings, you know, stepped up, and a couple had actually career nights. So, I mean, you know, you and Ray Marucci led, you know, scoring with 16 points. I thought his footwork looked really good last night. you know, you've kind of had back-to-back team game highs. You also tied your career high with 6 assists in a game. You know, but you really saw senior Colton, you know, Gillingham. He had 15 points. That was a career high. Anthony Cooper, 14 points. That was a season high for, you know, what does this kind of, like, team effort, you know, say about, like, the depth and in the chemistry of the squad so far this season?
Yeah, I mean, we don't care who gets it done, and we don't care who scores the most points. We're really just out there for each other. And, I mean, you can just tell by how hard some of those guys have been playing all season that it was just kind of bound to happen. You know, Colton's always out there, you know, turning up the heat on defense and getting steals and doing those things for us. And so it was just, you know, a matter of time before the ball went in the basket as much as it did last night. And so I think it also just kind of speaks to the, like, immense confidence that we have in each other. You know, we're very unselfish, and we're willing to, you know, share the ball and make sure whoever's got the hot hand that night, it's kind of their show, you know. And so Coop kind of had it in the first half, and Colton really picked us up in the second half. And so I'm really just super happy for those guys and for our team, and, you know, just the things that we show that we have so many different sides to us. And, you know, if one guy is not their night, there's going to be another guy that steps up. And it just says a lot about the culture that we're building here.
Yeah, 100%. Now, you know, under Coach Delp, do you feel maybe more enabled to be more aggressive in games, you know, at the point guard position, you know, than maybe kind of in years past? What are your thoughts around that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, Coach Delp has, you know, pulled me aside so many times. And, you know, after he'll get on me at practice and yell at me for, you know, maybe not doing the right things or not being ready to go, he'll tell me how much confidence he has in me. And I know that circles throughout the team. And it's kind of been like night and day from, you know, this year and the past couple of years. It's huge. He just wants you to go out there and play free. And it's not so much of a set of rules. It's just kind of, you know, expectations that have been built over the last, you know, it's been a year since he's been running the show. And so I think just as you know, as he keeps continuing to reinforce those principles in us, and as long as we're playing hard, you know, the sky's really the limit for this year, and I think for years in the future as well.
Well, and you guys are being way more aggressive defensively, you know, pressing the ball, you know, full court a lot more, kind of slowing down offenses. You know, where do you feel like defensively, you know, how do you feel like that's kind of working into the game plan to be so aggressive? Early on in the game, you know, you guys are pressing, you know, whether it's to, you know, continue to kind of maintain the lead or, you know, or expand on it. What are your thoughts around just how aggressive you guys have been on defense so far this year?
Yeah, I mean, we want to play as fast as possible, you know, because of the depth that we have, and we have so many guys who are, you know, itching to contribute and guys that can play heavy minutes. So I think pressing has really become a part of our identity because, you know, it just comes to that, like, it's some of those miniature games. Like, obviously you want to win, you know, the rebounding battle, or, you know, you want to shoot better from the field than the other team. But, you know, if you can slow down opposing offenses and make them, you know, get into the front court and get in their offense later in the shot clock, like, that's a mini game that we like to win every time. And so just those little things that can take kind of the offense out of their comfort zone, mm-hmm. you know, making different guys bring up the ball, or, you know, making someone continually bring up the ball against pressure, like, it's a hard thing to do. And as a point guard, you know, being pressed is not fun. So we kind of want to make it as hard as possible on the other team. And then on the flip side, like, we want to get the ball up as, you know, not as fast as possible, but we want to be in our offense in 4 seconds or less, or we want to get in the paint and spray for threes or at the rim finishes. So it's really just kind of boiling things down to, like, winning mini games inside of the game. And I think Coach Delp really keeps our minds focused on those little battles.
Well, it's funny you mentioned mini games, and last night, you know, I heard him say something to the tune of, 4 minutes. What are we going to do to get those back? And it might have been, I think, there in the beginning of the second half. But it seems like, again, you're kind of breaking it down into these like micro moments, throughout the game. And it's like, okay, how are we going to get those kind of 4 minutes back? So I think it's unique, to see kind of how he coaches and how your guys is, team really kind of approaches the game. And what I thought was interesting too, the tenacity of like the team doesn't hang their head. I remember, Sean, went down, got the steal, missed the dunk. They got the rebound, and then he came back down, he stole it again. So he went down and scored. So I think about, the fact that there isn't any quit, and what you guys do, speaks a ton about, I think, the character, of everybody that's playing, and I think just the buy-in to, you guys have each other's backs, and it's like, okay, next play, let's go. Let's forget about what we did 3 seconds ago. So I thought that was pretty awesome to see. Now, since you joined the Vikings, your sophomore year, you played in all but like one game last year, I believe. However, this year you've moved, into that starting role. You've started all 11 games for the Vikings. What's been maybe the biggest adjustment for you in transitioning from, a supporting role to kind of starting every game this year?
Yeah. Just kind of thinking as like a point guard, you really want to look at the flow of the game, right? So like if we're really hot on offense and, everything seems to be going in the rim, then, you can kind of play a little bit more freely. But, just kind of recognizing that pace from like while you're being in the game as opposed to like watching it from the bench, you get a better idea of like, okay, this is working, this isn't, when you're kind of looking at the whole floor from the bench. But, kind of as a starter, you kind of got to just kind of figure it out in the first, 3 to 4 minutes or however long that kind of shift or mini game is, essentially. And so just kind of being able to analyze in the moment and figure out, all right, this worked, this didn't, we need to do better at this. How do I kind of affect that or, take control of the game, so to speak. And, you mentioned the 4 minute segment that, Coach Stout, talked about like after halftime, you kind of just want to think about that, where it's like, all right, don't think about the whole game at the start, just think about how you can really affect those first couple minutes, and then keep controlling what you can control. So
yeah, absolutely. Now what maybe lessons or experiences did you gain, from coming off the bench that you think could serve as like really valuable advice for those underclassmen, kind of on the team?
I think really just having kind of a short-term memory and that the having confidence in yourself. Like, and one of my, biggest things with Coach Stelp is I think he's done a fantastic job. It's just instilling confidence in all of us. But it doesn't really matter how much confidence everybody has in you if you don't have any in yourself. So just coming off the bench, just, maybe not having any expectations at all, just knowing what you're supposed to do and knowing your job and just kind of sticking to it. I think that's kind of the biggest thing to keep in mind as some of these younger guys are watching. It's like, just know what you can do and go out there and play with confidence, because, you're out there for a reason. If someone puts you out there, they believe in you. And so just being able to give yourself that chance by believing in yourself fully.
100%. Now, what does your like game day kind of preparation, look like?
Typical game day, wake up and have I eat the same thing for breakfast every day. I'm pretty boring. I eat a cheese bagel, and then I eat like a Greek Chobani yogurt. Like, that's my go-to. I feel like it gets me enough like protein, some energy before the game. So, and we'll usually have practice, like shoot around type of thing, walk through. So do that before practice, and then we'll have team meal. I always got to get a nap in before. Got to get at least a 30-minute nap to get me feeling fresh. But I try, like, for a home game, I try and get there, I think, like, an hour and a half early. Get some stretching done in the locker room or the training room. and then go out there and get on the court for a little bit, just kind of get the ball in my hands, do some handle work, and then go through like some touch work around the rim, and then kind of get my shot feeling right before the game. But I always gotta chew the same type of gum and drink a Gatorade before the game. So those are my two kind of superstitious things. So if you see me in warmups, I'm always chewing something, and then I gotta finish my Gatorade before the game. It's kind of a big thing for me. So
All right, what flavor of Gatorade is your choice?
it depends on the game. I typically I'll do like a color of the other team. So like Bethel last night, I was drinking a blue Gatorade before the game. So it's just a little mental game I like to play with myself. I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but against Co the first game, I remember I was like I didn't have a red Gatorade, so I had to go to the gas station before and grab a Gatorade. So it's just a little weird superstitious thing that I do, but yeah.
Any particular music kind of choice that you like?
So I'll before game day, like I'll kind of listen to anything or whatever, but anytime, like as soon as I step on the court, it's Michael Jackson before the game. It's always Michael Jackson. And so like I don't know, I feel like it's kind of it speaks to like my game and maybe me as a person a little bit, just being kind of like a free spirit. And it's just he always gets me dancing, and the vibes are always up when I'm listening to Michael Jackson. So he's one of my favorite artists, I won't lie. So
So if there was one Michael Jackson song that you had to listen to on repeat, what would it be?
it'd probably be bad. I just like the beat of that, and especially because like just before the game, I feel like it really gets me going. And I don't like the hard rap or the hard rock. Like I feel like it's kind of that's more of like a football thing where it's like kind of a rah-rah. Like basketball, I feel like it's a little bit more of a dance. And so I kind of like the way Michael Jackson gets me going before the game. So
I like it. I like it. Now, in high school, you wore, the number 5 jersey. Now you wore one at McHenry County, but you came back and you've been number 5 here at Augie. Any particular reason, why you gravitate to number 5 at all?
I don't really have a good reason behind that. I mean, high school, so it was kind of the one of the only jerseys that would fit me in high school, to be completely honest, because I was a 3-year varsity player at Stevenson, and I'm not a big guy right now, and I certainly wasn't my sophomore year of high school. I think I was 5'6", probably like 130 pounds or something like that. So, and not many jerseys were gonna fit me, and number 5 was one of the ones that was available, and I was kind of last on the totem pole as a sophomore picking numbers. So 5 just kind of was the only small jersey that fell to me, and I mean, I just thought it was so super cool getting a varsity jersey as a sophomore, and so it's kind of just been my thing ever since. I was just like, oh yeah, I love 5. And one of my teammates at McHenry felt strongly about me at number 5, so I was like, that's right, like you got it. So took a year off and then came back in number 5. It's just kind of been my number.
Yeah, no, I like it. Consistency, I think with a number sometimes it's just by happenstance, and next thing you like to stick with it because it becomes kind of part of your personal identity. And now with I was thinking a little bit about your year at McHenry County. Now, has it crossed your mind at all that if there's any NCAA like formal ruling that comes out around like eligibility, has ever kind of crossed your mind to come back and try and play another year if granted another year of eligibility, or what are your thoughts there?
I mean, I've been keeping up with the ruling, and this can kind of get into kind of some of my future plans after Augie. But I mean, I want to be a graduate assistant at some point, whether that's next year or a year in the future. I'm not totally sure. Just a lot of moving parts with that situation, and the NCAA has made some drastic changes to a lot of what is college basketball and college sports. So it can the ground, it feels like the ground's shifting kind of every day. They could say one thing today, and then, you know, they come out a week later and everything's completely changed. But I mean, I have been keeping up with it. It's something that I've thought about, and, you know, obviously it'd be cool to play another year, but I haven't given it like too much in-depth thought. I'm really just focused on, you know, this year and the success we can have as a team, because, you know, I something that you learn kind of early on is, like, you know, there will never be two of the same teams ever again, you know? Mm-hmm. So, like, even if I were to decide to play another year, I'd be doing it without, you know, six of my best friends in the whole world. And so I just really am focused on cherishing this time with my guys and making the most of this year.
Yeah, what a great perspective. Now, you know, I had asked Chase on Friday, like, you know, what away gym was his favorite to play in, but I wanted to adjust that question a little bit for you, because when you think about some tough crowds to play in front of, you know, who's been maybe the toughest crowd to play away, you know, here in college so far, do you think?
I mean, Wesleyan's always tough. They always have a great, you know, supporting fan section. And it also doesn't help that one of my childhood best friends plays football there. So he makes it his personal mission to bring all of his buddies there and try and get a rise out of me. So, and they're typically pretty good at it, but, you know, it's all in good fun. So Wesleyan's always a fun crowd to play against. I remember last year we went to Carroll, I believe, on, I think it was the last game of our regular season. And they had the whole football team right next to our bench. And it was a pretty rowdy environment, but I mean, I love playing in front of fans, and, you know, I love just the whole environment that, you know, a college basketball game kind of entails, and you know, the pressure, the crowd, the screams, you know, all that sort of stuff is, you know, it's great for the environment, and I love when fans talk to me. I think it's the funniest thing ever. So, and playing in the Carver Center, you know, you kind of get used to some fans yelling some stuff, so it's really great. But my top two crowds I'd say Carroll and Wesleyan so far. Those are the two best, you know, student sections and really crowds overall.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, and you can kind of thank ChatGPT for this, but, you know, it kind of dug up the old article from your junior year with the Mundelein crowd. I mean, is that still kind of the top rowdiest crowd, or is, you know, Wesleyan or Carroll kind of taking that?
You know, just due to the proximity of the two towns and, you know, some of that whole history going back there, I don't know if anything's ever going to top the Mundelein crowd for me, because they were just, I mean, they had signs, fat heads, all that stuff, and they were getting after me all game. But I, you know, to be honest, those are the games you remember. Those are the fun games, is, you know, when something's at stake and people are really, really caring about what happens on the court, and it just elevates the play and makes everyone, you know, so much more locked in. So I think those moments are really all in good fun.
Well, I mean, you know, it doesn't hurt that you stepped up and knocked down, you know, a pair of free throws for the win, you know, with, you know, under 2 seconds left there in the game. So it was kind of a nice way to kind of silence the crowd there and walk away. But yeah, that was pretty cool. Like, I had no idea. And, you know, and then, you know, like, you know, months later, that moment was, you know, shared across, like, Break Ankles Daily, Overtime, ESPN Sports Center. I mean, it was like millions of views. So it was kind of neat to kind of read about that last night. Now, you know, when you look back at kind of your 3 years here, what moments or maybe milestones stand out the most to you?
I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is the Carthage game away last year in the playoffs. And just kind of, you know, because there's just a different feel in the gym whenever it's, you know, playoff basketball. It's like really win or go home. And, you know, unfortunately that result didn't go the way that we wanted to, but just kind of the environment and the stakes that we were playing for. And just especially coming off of the year that we had last year and kind of the start of, 2 years ago, so my sophomore year, we didn't make the tournament. And that was, you know, really disappointing for all of us, because we felt like we had a chance to do to do something special maybe in the tournament, and then we just kind of didn't get it done in the back half of the season. But you know, just playing at Carthage was probably a big moment for, you know, for me and for the whole team, is just kind of showing that we're capable of taking that next step. And then this year, the first game against Co was really a special environment, and you know, I played pretty well, and also we just had like a great fan section there. So mm-hmm. it was a really, really big moment for us in Augie basketball, and kind of maybe not like a we're back, but we're getting there type of moment. Mm-hmm. So we were really appreciative of, you know, the crowd, and also just like our student section.
Well, I mean, I can tell you, I mean, you know, sitting at 8-3, I mean, you're certainly making some great memories, you know, just from a peer performance standpoint. And yeah, it's, you know, Carver is slowly getting back to, you know, Carver-esque type things. I mean, it feels like, I was just looking at some attendance. Attendance has been up. I mean, we're talking on average 100 people, you know, and that's pretty significant when you think about, you know, the, how many folks are, you know, kind of can come into Carver, but yeah, it feels a lot more energy. The last couple of years has probably not felt like as much like a home game, you know, so that, you know, that advantage wasn't there. But, you mentioned playing up at Carthage. Now, when I watch that game, or really feels like anytime I watch a game where the Vikings are up at Carthage, is that gym feel that dark? It kind of has an older, you know, look and feel to it. And I'm like, it's hard to tell if it's really the camera, or does it kind of have that older, I'll call it like a Boston Celtic, you know, type vibe?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely has that, like, stage lighting and spotlight lighting where the court's kind of the only thing that's lit up. And so I think it makes the arena like feel a lot bigger than it is. And it's a very nice arena, but you know, sometimes they don't fill it as well as, you know, we fill the Carver Center. So that's kind of a point of pride for us. And they, maybe they got to keep the lights off because there's nobody up there. But anyway, yeah, it's definitely got that kind of feel, and it's definitely feels like kind of a dungeon that you got to go into and really, you know, it's going to be a fight anytime you go up there. But that, I'd say Carthage is probably one of my favorite places to play in the CCIW. Just the whole, like, the courts are just a very nice court, and, you know, it's always good to go up there and get a win against them, so.
Now, are there any, you know, kind of players growing up that you idolize at, like, the point guard position, you know, that you always want to try and mirror your game a little bit after?
Yeah, I mean, the first one that comes to mind is Jalen Brunson. So he went to the same high school as I did. And so my dad being the head varsity coach at the time too, I got to really, you know, be around him a lot. And he's, you know, just watching him growing up, I really always wanted to be just like Jalen, and just to see him reach the heights that he's reached this year, being an all-star last year, and just kind of his work ethic is really something that, you know, rubbed off on me. And I always try and, you know, emulate my game to be like him, because, you know, he's shorter, not as athletic guard, and so I kind of feel like I've taken a lot from his game. But my favorite player growing up was 100% Kobe. He was, you know, he was just so electric to watch, and it felt like every time, you know, he shot the ball, it was going in. And so my childhood favorite's Kobe, but then kind of as I've, you know, grown up in, you know, middle school, it's really always just trying to emulate my game after people who are a little more realistic, because I don't have the Kobe athleticism or the build, unfortunately. But, you know, just like small guards like Jalen, or like, you know, Steph Curry, who's not as small but can do some really amazing things, or those are probably my role models, I guess, or idols in the basketball sense.
Well, I mean, you may not have the stature of Kobe, but I think you've got the heart, you know, and I think, you know, how you play and how aggressive you play, I mean, you have, you know, zero hesitation to go in and go inside the paint and you know, and drive and be physical, you know, as well. So it's a ton of fun to see. And now, what are some of the things maybe non-basketball related that you like to do in your free time?
I collect records, and that's kind of the thing that's been hurting my pocketbook pretty recently. But you know, that's kind of like my thing or hobby outside of basketball. I'm a big sports fan too, so I'll watch any sort of like college basketball or college football and that sort of thing. But records are kind of my main thing, and music, just listening to music. I love listening to any sort of music. So like anything from like classic rock to like R&B and like hip hop and jazz, even, you know. So when I'm studying, I'll throw on some of those playlists and just listen to anything. I've always loved music and really wish I had musical talent to where I could play an instrument, but I'm not coordinated in that way, unfortunately. So
What's probably your most prized record?
my most prized record is The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. That's my favorite album of all time, and she's just an amazing talent vocally. And so I wish I'd gotten a chance to see her in person at a concert, but I've not gotten the chance yet. And she that's just a record that's always really special to me. And when I got my record player 2 years ago, I believe, it was one of the first albums that are records that I bought for myself, and just kind of going to different record stores and checking those things out, and you know, talking to people who've been collecting for forever is just really kind of a interesting hobby that I have.
My first record was Phil Collins, Jefferson Starship, and I had Michael Jackson's Bad. My dad was a big record collector. I mean, he's the quintessential, 70s guy. And so I always grew up with records in the household, and so that's always kind of a cool, like, pure. It's like pure music to me. Is there a
I got one right here, not to interrupt, but my dad just
yeah.
got me this the other day. So it's Pete Townshend's White City. So it's kind of a special bond that me and my dad have, that you know, he'll share music with me that I didn't even know that he liked or hadn't even heard of. And so it's just kind of something cool that we can do together. So
What's the one album you're maybe searching for that you haven't found yet?
oof, searching for. I want to give you a good answer here. I don't know. I think maybe one of like a Tribe Called Quest album. I don't know it off the top of my head, but just kind of like that like 90s and early 2000s hip hop is kind of, I don't have a ton of those in my collection. I got one Outkast record. I think I have a Quemini. So that's like I need to build that part of my collection more, 'cause I got a Johnny Cash one as well that, you know, I really like, and my parents got me that one. So that's one that I kind of have on repeat. But yeah, I'd say maybe a Tribe Called Quest vinyl will be next on the list.
Like it. I remember growing up, like, I love Batman. That was like my thing. I think I went to every Batman that's ever been released in the theaters, like all the way back to the Michael Keaton. So I've got like the Batman record. That's a ton of really good stuff. Gosh, my mom was really big into Prince, so we a ton of Prince stuff. So it's cool to go through, especially when I was in Colorado, there was a place called, I think it was called Twisted Records, and it was huge. I mean, you could spend hours, in that place just searching, just looking, and it is a pretty cool stuff. And gosh, that's when like the movie Empire Records came out, and that's always a quintessential like 90s, movie. And so that's awesome. It's cool to hear someone, likes the vinyl. So feels pure.
Yeah, it's a timeless treasure, and I think it's super cool to just have your music right there. And so I think it's something that should never go away. And it's a bond that me and my grandma have too. She's got a bunch of like Beatles records and that sort of thing. So yeah, it's just really cool, 'cause it connects you to a bunch of different people that you may not interact with. So
Absolutely. Well, there's nothing like when you just drop the needle on, you hear the crackle, before it starts.
oh yeah.
It's just timeless. So, Now I'll say that the best, I always felt like the best speaker to listen to vinyl on was through Sirwin Vegas. That's, you know, kind of old school there as well. But man, you just brought up a ton of memories of like my childhood. So, yeah. Well, back to you. So, so you kind of mentioned a little bit, you know, what your plans are after Augie. Now you're a finance major. You know, why did you choose finance? And, you know, kind of the second part of that, you know, what would kind of life after Augie potentially look like?
Yeah. Kind of when I was thinking about declaring my major, I've always been pretty analytical and kind of like a numbers guy. So I wanted to kind of combine, you know, like a business degree with like a management and finance degree together. So to be honest with you, the equation was kind of, I'm just kind of pretty good at it. Like I naturally have just been comfortable with like things like econ or like financial management and like statistics and those sorts of things. So it's been my passion, sort of say, is because it came pretty easily and it just kind of clicked and made sense. So, but I'm not super like interested in working a desk job for the rest of my life. You know, obviously that lifestyle works for some people, but I'm bouncing off walls a little bit too much and know that a normal job maybe wouldn't suit me for like my long-term happiness and plan. And so for the past three summers, I've coached with Fundamental U, an AAU team in the Chicago suburbs, and have just absolutely had the time of my life. And there's just something special about, you know, taking a group of, you know, youth basketball players and kind of showing them that through a lot of, you know, hard work and, you know, dedication that they can, you know, they can become more than they expected from themselves. And so, you know, just seeing that kind of development and, you know, maybe self-actualization as a, you know, big word for you. It's just kind of really cool to see young minds develop and, you know, turn out to be more than they thought they could be. So I really just, I want to, you know, give back essentially and, you know, be the person that my dad was for me and Coach Delp was for me and my JUCO coach was for me, and kind of be that figure for guys moving forward and kind of share the joy that, you know, I've gotten from my basketball career and really give that to everybody else.
Now, do you find yourself, you know, on that side of the spectrum, coaching, you know, taking things and being able to see the game a little bit differently? I mean, especially as a point guard, but also just on the court, are there some things that you've taken away as a coach that has kind of helped you on the court and vice versa?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I think that one of my biggest lessons from, you know, Coach Delp and being here as a player that I've taken kind of into my coaching is it doesn't really matter like what he sees essentially. It matters what the players see. So it matters how things feel on the court rather than like an outside perspective of getting things done. Mm-hmm. So I just think like the constant feedback loop from like player to coach and just being really in sync, and especially it makes it even more important as like a point guard. Like sometimes I'll you know, check out of a game and be like, hey, I'm seeing this and this. I think we should go to these calls, and just kind of being on the same page is something that I've really, you know, found to be more important, especially, you know, getting into this season, that I really think that I'll take into my future career if I do become successful as a coach. And I think that's something that I'll always really remember and respect about Coach Delp, is that he's willing to, you know, pass control on to people that he trusts. And I really think that's, you know, been helpful for us as a team and something that I would really love to do going forward.
All right, well, that's a great note to wrap up on. So, well, Evan, thanks again, you know, for taking some time to speak with me this morning, man. It's been a ton of fun.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me on.
And for those watching, so you can catch the Vikings on the road Tuesday at 1 o'clock in Milwaukee. They visit the 17th-ranked Wisconsin Lutheran College Warriors. So I wish I could drive up, but we're hosting New Year's Eve with our friends and their kids. So we'll be watching online. But good luck on Tuesday, and we'll talk to you here soon.
Thank you so much.